And for knowing things, there are means. There are means of knowledge. The means are known as pramana in Sanskrit, pramana. And Upanishads are a part of the Vedas, and the one meaning of Veda, coming from Vid Dhatu to know, but Vedaha, Vedaha, Pramanaha, Pramanam. So Vedas are also a means of knowledge. Now, these means of knowledge, the various means, there are various means of knowledge, and the Nyaya School of Philosophy has done a great deal of research on these, and they have come up with these six different types of pramanas or means. And Advaitins, Bhagwan Shankaracharya, has accepted these without any question because they are all correct. Now we'll be seeing them in detail. We have seen them in various texts like Tattva Bodh, etc. But now we go into more detail. So the first thing to know about means or pramana, there are two types of pramana or means. One is known as Sadharan Pramana, and the other one is known as Asadharan Pramana. Sadharan Pramana means a general means, and Asadharan Pramana means a specific means. So to give you an example, this is a room and I want to say measure it. I want to measure the dimensions of the width and the breadth and the height and whatever. Light is an essential factor because if I can't see, how do I measure? But tape, a measuring tape, is also extremely essential. So in this case, light becomes the Sadharan Pramana. It's a general means. I do need it. But then the tape becomes a specific means. So without the tape, I can't measure. So in all, what should I say, methods of gaining knowledge, there will always be these two, the Sadharan and the Asadharan. Like if you take our senses, then hearing, listening, air is required because sound cannot travel in vacuum. So air becomes the Sadharan Pramana, but the ear is the Asadharan Pramana. So in every knowledge that we get, there will be these two. And generally the Sadharan Pramana are time and space, light, those type of things. And then there will be a specific pramana depending on what type of knowledge I'm trying to get. So if I'm trying to get knowledge of color and form, then I will become the specific pramana. If I'm trying to get the knowledge of taste, then tongue will become the specific pramana. So this two types of pramanas are there, and both are required in gaining any knowledge. Now, the next thing that pramana does, pramana or means, they give us the knowledge, but they don't change anything. Meaning, I'm looking at a wall and it is white. Okay, that is the knowledge I get. If I want to change the color from white to red or pink or blue, that knowledge is not going to change the color. It is action which is going to change. So means, pramana, the means of knowledge, only give the knowledge. They do not change anything. If you want to change something with the, do some change with that knowledge, you have to do action. Okay? So the means, there are two means, and the means can only give us knowledge. They will not change anything. Pramanam, nyapakam, natu karanam. So knowledge they will give of the object, of what I'm trying to know, but that object can never be changed by the pramana. Right. Now, the Nyaya School of Philosophy have come up with six types of means or pramanas. The first of them being Pratyaksha Pramana. Pratyaksha, the break of the word is Prati Aksha. Aksha means eyes. Prati means in front or in direct proximity. So direct perception is that where the object is in front of the, when I say Aksha, I've always told you, when we say one sense organ, we are including all the five. So that object has to be in close proximity of that sense organ for a direct perception to happen. So it is etat kal, etat desh. Means what? At this time, this particular object has to be in front of my eyes if I want direct perception of that object. It is not if I think, oh, I have that computer or I have the TV in the other room. That is not direct perception. That is memory. Okay, because that TV is not directly in front of me, but the computer is directly in front of me. So I can say I have direct perception of the computer. So this direct perception can be of sound, taste, touch, but there has to be a proximity. So I cannot say that I have direct perception of the road outside, because I really don't, because that road is not very close to me. Okay. So with these pramanas, the senses, pramanam svavishaya shuraha means what? Means eyes is a pramana, ears is a pramana, but eyes can only see color and form, ears can only hear sound, nose can only smell, touch, skin can only touch. Okay, so they do not interfere with this. So if there's a loud sound, the eyes cannot get disturbed because they don't hear the sound. The ears will get disturbed, but not. So each pramana is very specific in its own field. Eyes are only specific to color and form, ears only to sound, etc., etc. Sometimes to get knowledge, we have to use more than one pramana. So if say there is a flower and I look at it and it's pink, and okay, it's pink, but if I've never seen a rose or a lotus before, then just because the color is pink, because my eyes are telling me it is pink, I cannot determine that what exactly flower it is. So the other pramana would be smell, nose. So then I would smell it. The third pramana, we can use more than one pramana, not just two. Then I may go touch the petals, see that they are very soft. But then I may also try to find the thorn, because I know that roses have thorns. So we can use more than one pramana to gain a complete knowledge of an object. Okay. And when we use more than one, then generally one is called the strong pramana, which is a sabala pramana. Bala is strength. Sabala means very strong, and or nirbala, which is weak. And the example for this is, in physics, we have done this experiment. We take a pencil and we put it in a glass of water. And when I look at that pencil now, it appears bent. But my intellect there tells, intellect also is a means of knowledge. Huh? Mind also is a means of knowledge, not that just only five senses. So intellect tells me that no, the pencil is not bent. It is the refraction of light that is making you see the pencil is bent. So when the sabala pramana comes, the strong pramana comes into play, when it is needed to come into play, then the strong pramana will authenticate or negate. Either one, either way it could be. So in this particular case of the pencil, it negates the knowledge that I have gotten from my eyes that the pencil is bent. That knowledge is now negated, and therefore the decision of the intellect stays, because it is the stronger pramana. It is the stronger means of knowledge. Same example we can give for the sunrise and the sunset. The eyes actually will see the sun coming up in the horizon, will actually see the sun going down in the horizon. But then the intellect tells us that the sun is not moving at all. So actually, because when you say rise and set, they're verbs. Verbs indicate movement. So my eyes say, oh, beautiful, sun is rising. But the intellect is saying, no, it is not rising. Neither is it set. Neither will it ever set. It's just the movement of the earth. Okay. So there is sabala pramana, strong. And then the weak means of pramana, weak means. And the strong means, whatever the strong means tell us, that will stay. So it could authenticate or negate, either way. Now, the strong means sometimes are always required to get correct knowledge. See, we can get like, okay, the pencil is bent. Is that correct knowledge though? I see the pencil bent, but is that correct knowledge? No. So question arises, what exactly is correct knowledge? So there is an incorrect knowledge and there could be an incorrect knowledge. Like I walk into the room which is dimly lit, our very famous favorite example, I see a snake. Is that correct knowledge now? Then later on somebody walks in, turns the light on and says, oh no, it's not a snake, it's only a rope. So correct knowledge means what? So correct knowledge has three aspects to it. One thing is there should be no doubt about that knowledge. So, you know, when I walk, I'm like, oh, is that a snake or is that a garland or what is it? So there's some sort of doubt. So correct knowledge cannot have that sort of a doubt. The second aspect of correct knowledge is abhatitam. Abhatitam means it can never be negated. So I walk in and then I say, it's a snake. And then somebody walks in and turns the light on. Then the snake knowledge is negated. So because it is negated, that snake knowledge which happened, that time also it was false only. It was not correct knowledge. Very common example is dream. While I'm dreaming, I think, I've told you this many, while I'm dreaming, I think it is very, very real. But it does get negated when I wake up. And therefore, it is not like the dream was real when I was dreaming and now it got falsified. It is not like that. It was false even at that time. This is a very important point that should be kept in mind, that what is negated was false even at the time when I thought it was real. All right. When I walked in, I thought there was a real snake there and I was really afraid. And now that the snake is negated, that time also there was no snake. I see a dream. I wake up. I know that. So even during, while I was dreaming, that time I was getting scared or happy or whatever with that dream, all that was false. All right. So it can never be negated. Then only we can call it as correct knowledge. Otherwise, it is not correct knowledge. And the third aspect of it is Smriti Vilakshanam. Smriti Vilakshanam means Smriti is memory. It is not a memory. If it is a memory, then I have seen it in the past somewhere, seen it, experienced it, and then I'm remembering it. So that is also not correct knowledge because my memory could tell me something different. So it is different from memory. It is not memory. Correct knowledge. This is important. Huh? Correct knowledge. These three things. So it is not memory. It has to be direct, that knowledge. It has to be irrefutable. It can never be negated in the three periods of time. And there should be no doubt whatsoever. All right? That's the thing. Okay. So the first one we saw, means of knowledge. In the transactional world, this direct perception is used all the time. While driving, I have direct perception of the light, the traffic. I'm looking around me, blind spot, changing. All that is falling under direct perception because it is happening. Okay, so most of the things are happening by direct perception in transactional world. The next one is Anumana. There's a Pratyaksha Pramana and next is Anumana Pramana, which is inference. So I see something by direct perception and I infer something totally different. And the example given in the scriptures is Yatra Yatra Dhumaha Tatra Tatra Vanni. Wherever there is smoke, there has to be a fire. Now, in this inference, this also is etat kal etat desh. Etat kal etat desh means at this time and at this place. It is happening simultaneously. So I am standing outside and I'm looking on the mountaintop. So at the same time now, there is a direct perception of smoke. I see smoke on top of the mountain. So that is direct perception because with my eyes, I see it, or even I could smell it with my nose, but I'm seeing it. Then from there, I'm saying there is a fire on the mountain. I don't see the fire. Fire is not direct perception. Smoke is direct perception. So from the smoke, I am inferring fire. Now, to have a correct inference, I have to know a correct relationship between the object that I'm seeing and the object that I'm inferring. There has to be, it is known, in Sanskrit, it is known as vyapti, or it is invariable concomitance. That is what it is called. Means what? means if I look up at the mountain top and I see a flower, I cannot say there is a fire, because there is no connection between flower and fire. I have to be able to establish, if I'm inferring something, I must give proof that smoke and fire are related. And therefore it says, as in the kitchen. That whole sentence goes, yatra yatra tata tata, yatha, in the kitchen. So in the kitchen, I have seen a fire, and that fire gives out smoke. And so I know that there is a relationship between the smoke and fire. And that is why when I have direct perception of the smoke, I have direct perception of one thing, I infer something totally different. Smoke and fire are, that way they're two different objects. Okay. And it is happening at the same time. It's not like fire is happening at one place and one time and smoke is somewhere else. It is not like that. So there has to be a relationship between the two. And this principle of inference, this means, this pramana is used by all the weather people. You know, when they say the chances of rain tomorrow, they're looking at the air pressure, the temperature, the moisture levels, and that's how they say humidity, all those things. And then they infer that if pressure is this much, humidity is this much, then there is rain or there will be snow or whatever. So all our weather reports are inferences. They are inferred because they have a relationship. They know the relationship between air pressure, temperature, humidity, all these things. They have to be related. They can't say, you know, like you can't say, I see a flower, so there is a fire. There's no relationship. So for inference to be correct, to infer correctly, I need to have vyapti. I need to establish a relationship between the object that I'm seeing and the object that I am inferring. Okay, so that is inference. That's the second one. The third one is presumption, or arthapatti is the third one, presumption. Some schools, what they say is presumption and inference is the same, they say. But it is not the same. I told you in inference, it's etat desh etat kala. Etat means right now, this time and this place. Whereas in presumption, it is not this place and this time. It is at some other time and it is this place and that time. So the most common example of presumption is I wake up in the morning and I see that the road is wet. So then I presume. So there is a cause and effect relationship, but the cause has happened in the middle of the night. It has happened at a different time. The rain has happened at a different time while I was seeing. There was no direct perception of the rain. I did not hear the rain. I did not see the rain. It happened while I was in deep sleep. But when I wake up and I see that the road outside my house is wet, then I presume that there must have been rain, because wet and water, there is a connection. But that cause has happened in the past. It is not happening right now. If it was happening right now, then there's no presumption. There's a direct perception of rain. So that is what arthapatti is. It's a presumption. So some schools, they say, oh, that's an inference also. You infer that there was rain. But this is the difference. There is the subtle difference that it's at a different time. Also, not every presumption, see, it has to be unique. What I'm seeing has to be unique. Like water can only be caused by rain previously. Now, of course, maybe some pipe burst or something. But if it is wet, wetness can only be caused by water. Like if there is a classroom full of students and then the father goes and he says, oh, these shoes are there. You know, that means my son must be inside. That cannot be a correct presumption, because those type of shoes could be worn by some other student. So it has to be very specific. Unless the name is written on the shoe, then he says, oh, my, even then some other child might have the same name. So it has to be again very, very specific. Arthapatti. The next is this thing. Now, upamana. Upamana is comparison. So knowledge can have, these are all means of knowledge. Huh? Please understand. Don't forget pramanam. pratyaksha. This is how I can get knowledge by direct perception. I can get it by inference, by inferring. But in inferring, if I want correct knowledge to happen, I need to know the relationship. In presumption also, I need to know the relationship. And when I presume, then something has happened in the past. I'm seeing it, the effect now and the causes in the past. Whereas in inference, the cause and the effect both are there, right there in front of my eyes. One is there and I'm inferring the other one. Upaman is by comparison. So the common example that the scriptures give us is somebody was going on a safari and they said, oh, there is this Nila guy that you must see. Nila guy? What is a Nila guy? I don't know. I've never seen. Okay. So he says, you have not seen Nila. That's okay. That's okay. Have you seen a guy? Is cow, huh? By the way. Cow. Have you seen a cow? Like an ordinary guy. Yes, yes. Cow, I know. Cow, I know. Okay. Then look at the, you know, the cow has a thing in the neck. We also have that here, right? Just under our chin. This, see that, how the cow has that? The Nila guy will have it much bigger. But everything else will be like the cow. So a comparison is given. One thing is known by the person, that direct perception he has got of the cow. Now he wants to see something else, which he doesn't know how to find. How do I know that this is a Nila guy? So he's told to compare. Compare that animal to the cow. If it looks like a cow, then look at the neck. And if this, I don't know what it's called, uvula, something. If it is big, then that's a Nila guy. So now, you know, this is the example given by the scriptures, okay, of the Nila. I am not really sure whether there is really a Nila guy, but this is how it's given. So that is called upamana, comparison. I can compare it to some object that I know. But also note that even for comparison, one object, I should have seen it or known it. So I should have already have had direct perception of it. Okay, to compare, because I should see both. Otherwise, how I can compare only one? The next one is anupalabdhi. Anupalabdhi is absence. So when I look at this screen and then I don't see one name, then the knowledge happens that this particular person has not joined in this class. So the absence is giving me knowledge. So absence also is a means of knowledge, okay, where a person is absent. And the last one is shabda pramana. Shabda is words. And nowadays, words are traveling so fast, WhatsApp and Twitter and Facebook and news and TV and everything. So a lot of knowledge is disseminated by words. With words, there is a problem. Certain words could have more than one meaning. Okay. And the example, common example is table. If I say table, you will have a doubt. Is she talking about a writing table, a dining table, a coffee table, or is she talking about a math table? Because maths also, we have got tables, right? If I just say table. So what happens with word as a means of knowledge, we must understand the correct meaning of that word in that context. That's where the commentaries come into being. That's why the Upanishad, the commentaries are very important, because that is where Bhagwan Shankaracharya, he explains why a particular word he is taking in that meaning and not some other meaning. Because to have correct knowledge, I told you, there should be no doubt and it should be irrefutable. So if one word is interpreted in one way, somebody else might come and say, yeah, but that word means this also. Then why do you interpret it in that way? It shouldn't happen. So words, that is a problem. That means what? We must know the language very, very well. Whatever language that we are reading in, words, okay? Now, words are of two kinds. Knowledge through words is of two kinds. Laukika and alaukika. Laukika, coming from loka. Loka, laukika means of the world. So that's what I said to you. TV, we hear words in the TV news, we read the newspaper, we read books, and this is how it becomes a means of knowledge. And that language that we are reading, we have to know correctly. Otherwise, there'll be misunderstanding. So Laukika and Alaukika. Now, Alaukika, in Laukika, there are again three types of knowledge, pramanas. So one is aitihasik word. So aitihasik is belonging to history. Ramayana and Mahabharata, they are also words. We are getting information on Ramayana and Mahabharata through words. So they are called as aitika pramana. Aitika means that which refers to history. Means something which has already happened in the past and now it has been written and now we are reading it. So we are reading about the past. Itihasa. Itihasa means Iti ahasa is the break of that word itihasa. Iti ahasa means this is how it happened. Happened in the past. History. Okay. So Ramayana and Mahabharata, they come under the Shabda Pramana. They are Shabda Pramana. They are means of knowledge through words. They're not direct. We did not see Ayodhya directly. We did not see Ram and Sita and all directly. But we still are getting knowledge of it. And the means is words. And those words are Laukika and they are known as the Aitika Pramana. The next set of words is Sambhava Pramana. Sambhava means what? It is possible. So the Puranas that we have the 18 Puranas and we have Bhagavat as the Mahapurana. That is also words. We have not seen Krishna Leela. We have not seen Shukadev. We have not seen Parikshit, right? So it is also words. So that is Sambhava means It is not aitihasik, but somehow it is possible that this must have happened. That is why it is known as Sambhava Pramana. Okay? And with Shabda Pramana, it's very powerful because we get knowledge of spiritual masters, lot of information. See, direct perception and all these other perceptions are quite limited. But words, the knowledge that is gotten through words can be immeasurable because you can read how many books you can read, right? How many subjects you can study. So words becomes the most, like direct, everything directly you cannot see. The whole world, the whole Canada, we cannot see directly. But we may read about it. We may see pictures of back east or whatever and we get information on it. The third type in this Laukika is Natya or Mudra. Natya or Mudra refers to dance. You know, where they don't speak, but then they do actions. You know, the deaf, they have the sign language, right? Sign language falls under this Mudra or Natya. Okay, because that is also a means of knowledge. Sign language is a means of knowledge. So the person will get the knowledge, but the words may not be like verbally spoken, but you know, like, this is very quiet. You know, somebody is very far away. I don't want to shout. So that is also words. That falls under words. Okay, so that is Natya or Mudra. So these are the three types. So there's one is the Aitika Pramana. Aitika, it's all Shabda. It's in Shabda. There is two categories. Laukika, Alaukika. We'll talk about Alaukika. Laukika has got this Aitika, which is Itihas, as it happened. Sambhava, yeah, it is possible that this may have happened, and then Natya or Mudra, so which dance falls under that. Okay, or we can also, children, I remember my mother, she made her eyes big, means okay, shut up now, you spoke too much. that is falls under this. Means right, like that. Okay, now there is another kind of pramana in Shabda also, which is known as Aptavakya. Aptavakya means it also means Praptavakya, but this Aptavakya, Vakya sentence, Praptavakya means that which will happen or this thing is only what is uttered by the realized masters. That's why we say, so and so said it and it happened. So-and-so said it and it happened. But that so-and-so cannot be us. Ordinary people don't have that power. The power of tapas that a realized master has, because there's a lot of tapas done when for going into samadhi, the meditation, all that. That power of tapas gives him the power. If I were to give you an example, in Siddhabari, when they first started building, there used to be a lot of winds. Our ashram is there in Siddhabari, and a lot of winds. So they would build and it would collapse. The winds, such heavy winds would be blowing that whatever structure they constructed was getting destroyed in the wind. So they went to Gurudev. They said, Gurudev, we don't know how to build this. What should we do? Because we have tried 2-3 times and the heavy winds come and then it's getting destroyed. So it is said that Gurudev went into meditation and then he came out and he said, first you have to build a statue of Hanumanji, because Hanumanji, Pavana Suta Hanuman, right? He is the son of the wind god. When the sun is there, he will control the wind. And that Hanuman idol, if whoever has gone to Siddhabari, you see that there's a huge Hanuman idol there that was constructed first before any structure went around it. That was, and when that was constructed, when that construct complete, then suddenly everything, whatever they built was staying and they could build around it. So that is Aptavakya. And after that, when the whole construction was done and everything, then Gurudev said, now that Hanumanji is here, he will bring Sri Ram. So the next time they had this Hanuman Abhishek or whatever, enough money was collected to build that Sri Ram temple. So Vanvasi Ram is there. Because Hanumanji was not there when Ram was ruling. In Ayodhya, Hanumanji was not there. He met him in the forest, right? When he was in search of Sitaji, he met him. So therefore, that temple is Vanvasi Ram. Vanvasi Ram Lakshman in Siddhabari. And that's again, Gurudev said it. So that those type of sentences, they are called as Aptavakya or Praptavakya. They will come true. But that has to be uttered by only the Mahatmas. And when we have full faith in that person, then it will come true for us. If he tells us something, we must have faith in those words. That's what happened. They said, oh, okay, Gurudev is saying, let's do the Hanuman idol first, then let's do it. And that was done. And then the work proceeded. All right. So this is a very important means of knowledge. And the other one is now Alaukika. Alaukika means not of this world. Loka is this world. Laukika is everything pertaining to this world. So Alaukika means pertaining to those worlds which we cannot see. Which ones? The 14 worlds. So the 7 up and the 7 down. Bhur, Bhuva, Swaha, heavens, Gandharva Loka, Kinnara Loka, Brahma Loka, Vaikuntha Loka, all these lokas that we talk about, they fall under this Alaukika Shabda Praman. Means whoever talk, whatever words are there about those worlds, 7 above and 7 below, they fall under the Alaukika Shabda Pramana. Okay? And Alaukika Shabda Pramana, so what is the means? It is the Vedas. Because the Vedas only talk about these worlds up and down. So Vedas, Veda Pramana, I told you, Vedas are a means of knowledge. And are they like direct perception or inference or presumption? No, they are a Shabda Praman. They fall under the Shabda Praman. And in the Shabda Praman also, they do not talk about the Laukika, what is happening in the world and mutual funds and this and that. No, they are only talking about Alaukika. Alaukika also means that which can never be known by the senses. Has anybody seen heaven and come back and told us that, yeah, in heaven, this and this and this is there? We have only read. Arjun went, you know, to Indra Loka and, you know, somebody went to, and Indra is the king. Oh, we have only read this. We don't know that. There is no direct perception. So Alaukika words, when we say Alaukika, they're saying it is to be understood as that which can never be known by the senses. And therefore, the Vedas are the only body of knowledge which tells us about this Alaukika things, the things which are beyond our sense perceptions. And we have to have complete faith in them if we are going to get the benefit of this, the words. Verbal testimony. So Shabda Praman is verbal testimony. Vedas are the verbal testimony for things which the senses can never ever know. Not only not the senses, not the mind and not the intellect. So that which is beyond the mind and intellect, for knowledge, for those things, we need the Vedas. Okay? All right. Next. Why are we talking about the Vedas? Okay, let me remind you that we are starting the Upanishad, and Upanishad is a part of the Vedas. That's why we are coming into Vedas. Huh? You'll say, what is the connection? Why should I? That is the connection. That's where we'll come now. And we have to understand what it is. Okay. So Vedas are the now Alaukika Shabda Praman. So Vedas fall under the Alaukika Shabda Pramana, not Laukika. Okay. Among the six means of knowledge, they fall under Shabda Pramana, but under Shabda Pramana also, they fall under Alaukika Shabda Pramana, which should immediately tell us that if Upanishads are a part of the Vedas, then Upanishad will only talk of those things which are beyond the senses. That means what? Direct perception, no use. Inference, no use. Presumption, no use. Absence, no use. Comparison, no use. Means the other five methods of knowledge are completely negated just by this one statement, that Vedas are Alaukika Shabda Pramana, Upanishads are part of the Vedas. That means that anything that is said in the Upanishads can never be known by the senses. All right. Okay. Now, what is the subject matter of the Vedas? Now, that is the next one. What is this Alaukika Shabda? What Alaukika things is the Veda, are the Vedas talking about? So the Vedas talk about only two things, Dharma and Brahma. That is it. That's it. Here, the word Dharma, see, I told you word has multiple meanings. So the first, Dharma must never be interpreted as caste. Okay, it's not talking about Hindu religion, please. There's no word like Hindu anywhere in Gita, in Veda, nothing. There is nothing. So that is not it. It is dharma. One word of dharma is that which holds. Dharyate iti dharma. Not talking about that either. Of course, because supreme reality that way, but not really. Here, dharma is the divine constitution. It is the divine laws which are governing all of us. So let us talk about laws. Huh? Ordinary, transactional world. So every country has its own set of laws, has its own constitution, right? So when we go into that country, simple things, you know, Canada and India, the driving is right-hand and left-handed driving, right? Totally different. So the laws of this country say that this is how the vehicle is to be driven. It is to be driven on this side of the road and not that side of the road. And those laws have to be followed. And those laws we will know by reading the constitution. It is mentioned in the constitution, this is how the traffic should be governed, or this is how the city should be governed, or whatever, you know. So to know those laws, we have to read that constitution. Now, to know this universal law, divine constitution. See, what is divine constitution? What do we mean by that? Is this, basically, it is the law of karma. Why is it that two children are born of the same parents, and then one child is very, very successful and the other one is not? Why are parents are highly educated and the children are turning out to be not educated at all? Or parents have no education at all and the children are becoming this thing? What is it that I have done that I get this sort of disease or this sort of sorrow or this sort of happiness? It is not written in any constitution. Is it written in anywhere? Why am I so poor and my sister is so rich? Why is one sibling so intelligent, the other is so dumb? Why has got one sibling, there's Down syndrome, the other one is a genius? All these are governed by the universal laws, the divine constitution, which is the law of karma. And these type of topics, which are not available anywhere else, are dealt with in the Vedas. And that is what is meant by the word dharma here. Okay, so the topic of the Vedas is only two. It's dharma and it is Brahma. The second topic, Brahma, is the supreme reality. Okay, it is talking about the ultimate subject and not about any object. And because it does not, the Vedas do not talk about the object, all the other means of knowledge get negated. So to truly understand the Upanishads, truly understand the Vedas, to truly experience it, you don't need all these direct perception and inference and presumption, etc., etc., etc. This is not possible. It's not possible to know it by those means, because we are going in search of the ultimate subject. In the transactional worlds, we are the subject and we are looking at all these multiple objects, but we are not in search of any object anymore. We are now in search of that ultimate subject, which can never be seen. It can never be seen by the senses. And that is why it is a topic of the Vedas. Okay. All right. So far, so good. Now, coming to the Vedas, there are four Vedas. We know that. Rig, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva. The Vedas are a mantra rashi, they're called, like ocean of knowledge. And they are a Purusheya. They are not written by any mortal. They are the mantras revealed to the rishis in their higher states of meditation. Okay. And previously, in those days, they were actually only transferred verbally, where the guru would chant and the disciples would memorize. And Guru Shishya Parampara, that is how they were being, passed on. Okay. The Vedas are beginningless and they are endless. They are also called as the breath of the gods. They come forth when creation happens. It is the same body of knowledge, the same same knowledge which comes forth during creation, and in pralaya, during pralaya, they will merge back into the supreme reality, only to come out in the beginning of the next cycle. Okay. Now we see books. Upanishad is now, there is a book, Ishavasya Upanishad. Then how did that come about? It is Bhagwan Ved Vyasa who, he studied all the mantras in the... But one thing about the Vedas is, if you see, when we studied Bhagavad Gita, we said shloka number so and so, shloka number. When we study the Upanishad, we are going to say mantra 1, mantra 2. We are not going to say shloka. And the difference there is, shloka is human written. It is written man-made. Mantra is mantra drashta. That's why it is only revealed to them in their states of meditation. So therefore, when we study the Upanishad, we will never use the word shloka. If I do use the word shloka, it is by mistake. It is mantra. They are all mantras, and Bhagavad Gita and all our Prakaran Granthas are all shlokas. Vivek Chudamani, Atma Bodh Tattva, all were written by Bhagavan Shankaracharya or whoever, Swami Vidyaranya or whatever. They are all shlokas. Upanishad is in the specific category, special category, which is therefore they are called mantras. Okay, they're not apurusha. Now, Bhagwan Ved Vyasa, he examined all these. There are like millions of mantras, millions and millions, and he divided them. He compiled them into four different categories. The Rig Veda is primarily, predominantly prose. If you read Rig Veda, I think Brihadaranyaka Upanishad is from Rig Veda, if I'm not mistaken. Most of it is in prose. It is not, you cannot chant it. See, that is another difference that you will notice now. When we did Bhagavad Gita, every shloka had a meter. If I didn't know it, it's my fault. But the shloka had a meter. Whereas in Upanishad, you will notice that there will be no meter. It has to be read in prose. because it is not written. When some human being is writing it, he's thinking, oh, I must rhyme this with this and this is how it should be and all that. But these are not written. So that is another thing that you will notice. We will notice. Anyway, so the Rig Veda is predominantly prose. The Yajur Veda comes from the word Yajus, and Yajus comes from the word Yajna. So the ritualistic mantra, so all the rituals that have to, that, you know, people do falling in the Karma Kanda. So like Agnihotra, this thing, and this Putra Kameshti Yajna, you know, Dashrath did that for a son, and Draupadi's father did it for the son and everything. All those yajnas, Jyotishtoma Yajna, Agnihotri Yajna, in Kathopanishad, he asked for the Agnihotra, all that falls under Yajurveda. So Yajurveda refers predominantly, it will have mantras which are to be chanted while doing the Yajna. Therefore, it is called Yajurveda. And the third one is Samaveda is Giti Pradhan. Giti Pradhan means it can be sung. Therefore, we have the word Samagayana. There are people who they sing this Samaveda, all predominantly the mantras can be sung. So there is a meter, there is a tune, that is how it is, the Samaveda. And the fourth one, Atharvaveda, has got all the sciences. Sciences means Ayurveda, you know, the medical. Ayurveda is our Indian medicine, astrology, astronomy. All these type of subjects, they fall under Atharva Veda. This is how these four Vedas are divided. This mantra Rashi, Bhagwan Ved Vyas divided because he knew Kali Yuga was coming, and he knew that people's minds, in the cycles of creation, I told you that Kali Yuga, the cow of Dharma, is standing on one leg. Lot of Adharma is there. First, that in the first Yuga, Treta Yuga, the cow was standing on four legs. Then in the next one, which is Satya Yuga, it stood on three legs. Then in Dwapar Yuga, it stood on two legs, the cow of Dharma. And now it is standing only on one leg. And therefore, we see the Adharma rising, increasing. And that is how it is going to go. It is going to go to such a height that Bhagwan will then come back as the 10th avatar Kalki. Okay? So these are the four Vedas. And each Veda is again divided into four parts. The first part is called as the mantra portion. The second is the Brahmana portion, which is the Karma Kanda, Brahmana or Karma Kanda. The third is the Aranyaka, and the fourth is Vedanta. Okay. All right. So far, so good. Lot of information. That's why I told you, introduction. It's very important that we know all these things before we study, we come to the Upanishad. Very easy for me to just straight off start the Upanishad, but you need to know all this background. Okay, so the four portions. Now, the four portions that we see in the Vedas, the mantra portion sort of refers to the Brahmachari ashram. We have the four ashramas, right? Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. So this mantra portion refers to where there are a lot of mantras which have to be studied. Studying has to go on. That's the mantra portion. Therefore, it is sort of compared to this Brahmachari ashram. So once you study that, then you have to make use of it. So the next one is the Brahmana portion or the Karma Kanda. So you have studied the ritual. Now you have to do the ritual. So the Karma Kanda portion refers to the Grahastha ashram. And if I were to give you a comparison to our modern life, see, first we study. We go to school, we go to university, we study. Then what do we do with that studies? We use that to earn money, find a job. Exactly. Right? So first we are students, Brahmachari. And then when we enter householder's life, or even before, we use whatever that I have studied, I will use it in my job. Right? To get a job, to get money, to get comforts, material benefits, etc., etc., etc. So that is exactly how those Vedas are. So mantra you study, then you perform all the rituals as a householder. And the reason that the rituals are performed by the householder, because rituals have got a lot of qualifications are required. And the one of the 99% of the rituals have the qualification of marriage, means spouse. Husband and wife both have to do it. And that's why it becomes, it's compared to that householder. Now, when the rituals are done, in the Aranyaka portion, which is the third one, the idea is that that person should now mature enough to start thinking, I did all those, what did they mean? See, he's busy. If you, it'll be easy if you, when you understand our modern life. I studied, okay, so then I got a job as per my qualification. So all that what I studied, I wanted a job. Why? Because I wanted money. Why? Because I wanted comforts. Why? Because I wanted to be happy. Okay, so all those things were there and I achieved whatever is to be achieved and I became a CEO or whatever, whatever, whatever. After, you know, children are grown up and then the person, if he's matured correctly, I did all that. Still, I want to be happy. Why I don't feel that happiness? So what did I do in the householder's life or when I ran after the job and ran after bonus and ran after promotion? What did I get? So these type of things, they come in the third stage of our life, which is the Aranyaka portion of the Vedas. And why it is called Aranyaka means in those days, that's why if you read in Mahabharata and all, the elderly people would go to the forest, right? Why? Away from sansar, away from world. Now in the modern days, actually this one lady had come to me many years ago in India and she asked me this. She said, you know, previously it was easy. People would just go to the forest and then it was okay. How can we go to a forest now? I mean, there are no forests only there. And how can we live when we have lived in cities and all? How can we go? So the idea here is not that you have to physically go to a forest, but in your mind, you must have that ashram attitude or means withdraw from the world. Going to the forest was that time physically they were doing it. They were going away from the world. Right now, you need not go physically away from the world, but mentally you must be capable of going away from the world. That is what is meant by this Aranyaka portion. Okay? And then the last portion is, so Aranyaka is compared to the Vanaprastha stage. We have Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vanaprastha. So Aranyaka is Vanaprastha. That's why it's called Vanaprastha. Vanaprastha means go. Going, right? Prasthan, prasthan, departure. We say in India, we have the airport, right? Prasthan, this thing. So this prasthana, departure, means depart into the forest. Okay, now physical departure at this stage in this modern, this thing is not possible. Yet people are doing it. Huh? Some people are going and they're serving the mission. We have a lot of people. They've come to Gurudev. They've come to Guruji. They've said enough. My children are all grown up and all. And now I'll stay in the ashram and serve the ashram. They do that. There's Rauji Vino in Bombay when we did the course. And even he's there now. He has, his son lives in Pawai. Son is married and all. He, wife has passed on. So he did the course with Guruji. And he told Guruji, Guruji, I want to stay in the ashram and I will do. So he looks after all us, the students. Rauji, his name is Rauji. If you ever go to Bombay, Sandeepani, he's there. So he has a room there. So his children come and visit and all, but he simple white clothes, one room, just like we students had. His room is also that one, no TV, no nothing. And all what the students need, books, students need supplies, all the our student, we would go to him. Oh, light is not working, faucet is not working. We'll go to him, he'll take care of it. So he takes care of the students. So there are that is physically going Vanaprastha. So he is not in the house, in the householder. He's not interfering with his children's lives anymore. And now he's serving the mission. So mission, that's why gives great opportunities for such things. And there are others. And one gentleman, Guruji gave him sannyas in Siddhabari. His name is Mr. Pai. His children, after his wife passed, he just went to Gurudev. He said, Gurudev, nothing, no more children, this thing. I'll stay in Siddhabari. So the whole administration of the Siddhabari ashram he was managing. And then I think Guruji is the one that gave him sannyas. Orange, he's in orange now. But he's doing administration. Okay, so that is Vanaprastha. And then the last part is Vedanta. And this Vedanta is what is Upanishad. Upanishad is a synonym for Vedanta. All right, so I'm going to stop here today. are there any questions? Because now, next time we will go into what exactly Vedanta is, and then we will try and go into, most probably we will go into the text itself. So any questions so far? You must understand this, all these things you must know. Especially, you know, in, those who are doing study groups and all that. No questions? Everybody is all good? Okay. Lot of information. So just, you know, think about it. And we will continue next time. A couple of things I wanted to tell you. In May, in the month of May, May 20th is a long weekend. And Swami Ishwananji is going to be here. So that doesn't affect us at all. Okay, so 20th May, there won't be a class because of the long weekend. But May 27th, please note, I will not be able to take class because Swamiji leaves and my friend is coming here from India and she'll be staying with me. So on the 27th of May, there won't be a class. Okay, 20th is a holiday, that is there. 27th, there won't be. So the next class will be on the 3rd of June. 3rd of June. Means, of course, next week is the 6th of May. 6th and 13th, there'll be class. 6th May, 13th May. And then two Sundays, we won't have class. One will be a long weekend. One will be because of my guests arriving here. So it will not be possible for me to teach class. And so the next one will be June the 3rd. So please note the dates. We will complete Ishavasya Upanishad. There are only 18 mantras. We will complete it before we close. If I have to take a little extra time on some day later on, or maybe an extra class, I will, because I don't want to leave this text halfway for over the summer holidays. So that the 27th May that I will miss, we'll make it up. And we have got 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, we've got like four Mondays in June. So I don't think that should be a problem. Okay. All right, any questions? It was all good. Okay, I will close now and we will meet next Monday. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Avashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. Thank you all. Hari Om.